accession number 20144, Reel 2.
Tom, go Reel 2.
We went over a partly blown bridge with just enough space to walk across on. And the three tanks were sheltered in the stream, close to the tall banks for protection. I found my platoon dug in on the other side of the bridge. They were much smaller now than when we started. And there was an odd number in platoon A quarters. So I had to dig in on my own. And I thought it was going to be a long, dark night on my own. When it got dark, the company runner arrived and told us to join the rest of the company on the road. So we joined the rest of the company and moved back up the road that we came down that morning. There was lots of farmhouses burning, lighting up the night around us. And we reached the top of the hill that we had started that morning. I don't know what went wrong, but we've been down all day being shelled. And we came back to the same positions we started in the early part of the day. But of course, this is just a rifleman's tale. Maps and the bigger things was left to the generals and the colonels and the company commanders. We did get a lot of briefings as we went up through Germany and the bigger attacks. We moved on for probably about 2 miles and turned into a field and dug in again for about the fourth or fifth time that day. The order was 2 hours on and 4 hours off. But nobody woke me for my 2 hours. In fact, I think we were all asleep. We had a heavy day. The sergeant's watch that was handed around to keep time for the watches was found in the earth between two trenches. So thankfully we had a good night's sleep. The next morning, breakfast arrived, and we felt good, because we're still in one piece. Breakfast, I always remember the breakfast, because it was the first time I had porridge in the Cameroonians, and it was made with salt instead of sugar. Not so good to me, but it all went down as food. Then we moved to another field, a better position. And we dug a sanitary pit, for the want of a better word. Fly pit would have been better, because the flies used to mass around it. And you couldn't spend much time there, because every so often the mortar shells came over. So you had to move quick. We were told we were the pivot battalion and we were resting, which meant that the rest of the brigade, the Seaforth and the Glasgow Islanders, attacked, and we were what they called the pivot battalion, something new to me. As we supposed to have been resting, a church parade was put on. So many from each platoon went back into a small field. on a hill with big trees on the sides. The priest arrived. The padre. Remember, it's quite a bit. He had his little box and stood in the middle of the field. Took out two chalices and a cross and put on top of it. Took his purple scarf out and put it around his neck. We had a hymn book or a prayer book given to us. We stood there singing a hymn with a rifle in one hand, a prayer book in the other hand, and two live hand grenades in our pouches. We got past the first hymn. The shelling started. The 2-inch mortar started falling quite close. Well, 2-inch or 3-inch mortars. And the padre blessed us all. I always remember it. He blessed us all and the enemy and prayed that we should be the victors. And with the same, he took his scarf off his neck, packed up his chalices, and went. And we all returned to our slit trenches. There was a road running behind us. And when the transport went down it, it caused a lot of dust. The enemy started shelling the road, of course, and he was missing the road, and we were catching the worst of it. So they put up a big notice. Dust means shells. And one man from Sembatoon had to stand by the notice and enforce the order as the various transports come down the road because of the dust they were creating. It was very, very dry times, of course, in the beginning of August in Normandy, very dry times. Dust. And a shell landed down the road, and I got wounded, got caught some shrapnel in my shoulder and arm. So I got evacuated.
What date was this?
This was the 10th, probably about the 6th and 8th. About the 8th or 10th of August. Probably about the 8th, I should think. 6th, 7th. About the 8th of August, I should think. We got sent by ambulance to various field hospitals. And I know they was put in this, it was a burn I had on my arm actually, one of the wounds, where the shrapnel ate and caused a blister, because it's very, very hot apparently, shrapnel. And they kept putting this here yellow gauze on, which seemed to be the thing, yellow and blue. They used to paint everything blue or yellow in those days. It didn't improve, so I eventually found myself back in British General Hospital outside Bayeux, under canvas. British 103, I think it was, British 103. Always remember, because it was run by Canadian nurses. And they were really angels, these here nurses. I got marked down for fit for RTU in 10 days' time, return to unit. But after about 6 days, the doctor came around, and to my surprise, he marked me down, evacuate by air, to Bloody. They put us in ambulances. Of course, I was walking wounded. The other stretchers and several walking wounded sat in as well. We went to an airfield. We went through Cannes, which was a total wreck. The place was blown really up. To a freshly made airfield. in the Dakota Plains, they had parked them in pits to allow loading to go straight on the plane because of the height of them. One of the ambulances, backing back to our plane, hit the wing and buckled the wing. So everything stopped. They sent for a flight sergeant. Flight sergeant climbed out on the wing, jumped up and down three times, tried to pull a bit of the buckled wing off, asked the pilot to work the flaps, give the thumbs up for us to carry on. So we took off with the bent wing. We got over the channel. The plane was loaded with wounded, threes and twos on each side, with us walking wounded sat in the middle. It was a beautiful day again, flew over the Isle of Wight. The pilot, there was only one pilot, and he came back to talk to us. He had put the plane on automatic. And he was a real RAF type and said we'd be back in time for tea or something. Real RAF. We landed at an airfield somewhere in England. I'd rather think it may have been somewhere near Bryce Norton. We were met by WAFs of walking wounded, and they took us to tents and gave us a first class meal on proper plates and dessert and service. Then we went by train to Neath in South Wales, and we were put in a temporary ward in the workhouse. There was what they called workhouses then, where old people lived. And there must have been about 20 of us there. And the old people used to make sure we had hot water to shave, and they really treated us well, darned our socks. And all the people in Neath used to give concerts for us. And they made a real fuss of us. After recovering, we had some leave. I had some leave home. Then they sent us to Banbridge in Ireland for some more infantry training. And then in field full marching order, they gave us a blanket as well, which we wrapped around our big packs in our ground sheets. This was extra, this blanket business. Went on leave again, and after leave, I remember Father coming to the station, it was very dark, and I went right on the train, just said cheerio, because I more or less knew what was coming the other end now. We went to Sunningdale Transit Camp to the 15th and 51st Island Div. I think there were other divisions there. We found ourselves in Southampton, aboard a troop ship, loaded with troops. We ended up on a boat deck that was boarded in. We spent most of the time queuing up for different things. Shave, great queues, washing bases, great queue, food, and things like that. And on the boat was Joe Lawson's band going over to entertain the troops. And Joe Lawson played on the port side at a certain time, which meant that all these hundreds of troops went over to that side of the boat, and the boat was at a dangerous angle. So I went over the other side. We eventually sailed to Ostend in Doodlebug Alley. All the doodlebugs, the pilotless bombs flying over on their way to London. We went from Ostend travelling fourth class in cattle trucks with straw on the ground, with straw on the floor, to a transit camp in Belgium or Holland, Burg Leopold. It was a place called Burg Leopold. It was full of reinforcements, and the weather was turning now because it was October time. That's why they give us the blanket to carry. All the ex-Normandy ones were sent back to their battalions. All the others were just sent to anywhere they liked. So I arrived back to North Cameroon in headquarters. We started on our usual meal, stew, McConaughey stew, with corned beef in. Very nice, really. Very filling. We had a meal settling in for the night. When orders came that all reinforcements will join their companies that night. So we went up in the dark. Goodness knows where we were going. Good job the officer that came to fetch us knew. We went through lanes and roads and woods. Finally came to a barn where Sembatoon was spending the night. And the platoon I had left in Normandy was virtually non-existent now. The only person I knew was a corporal that, he was a corporal in Normandy. He was now the platoon sergeant. Sergeant Rose, MM. He got the military medal for what he had done in Normandy. The officer had been killed back in Ireland by a sniper. Sergeant Smith was now company sergeant major. The next morning, without breakfast again, we set off towards the River Maas. And I seen my friend John Grant, he was in another platoon now, he was a full corporal. And I remember his words. He said, "Tom, I'm glad to see you, but I'm sorry you're back." We pushed on towards the River Maas, and we hit the River Maas. No opposition. You can look at right across the River Maas, very fast flowing. And you could see movement on the other side. To our left was a big long road going right down the bank with a house halfway down. So a corporal, me, and another rifleman was sent on patrol down this road, very exposed, to see what was going on in the house and to go on for about half a mile to a, perhaps less than half a mile, to a large walled-in garden to see if there was any enemy there. We got to the house and it was full of civilians, all in their best clothes, and they wanted us to stay and have a party. We could have stayed and had a party. But we must push on. We never went to the perimeter wall, but we went near to it. It would have been too risky to go near right to the wall. This is the first of quite a few patrols I did in the future. I could tell you more about them later, if we got time. Came back to the platoon, dug in a bank overlooking a tree, a small coppice overlooking the Maas, and it rained. and rain. We sent back for the, so a man from each section was sent back to fetch the food. So we had a very wet meal, very wet meal. Everything was getting covered in mud because we never had time to cover a part of our slit trench. We used to cover a part for sleeping, one man sleeping and one man stood up. We never had time or facility to cover half the slit trench. So everything was covered in mud. It got dark. Our morale was not very high. Then the order came to pull back. So we pulled back. And after a while, we were met by transport. And we ended up in a big barn with a quartermaster. Gave us a nice hot, sweet cup of tea. A dry pair of socks. And they shoot us all with a jerkin, a leather jerkin, which was going to be very handy for the winter that was to come. In the morning, we lit fires and dried ourselves out properly. I always remember because I burnt several fingers off the top of my gloves, drying them over the fire. We had a meal. The order get dressed again. We got dressed. Or grabbed our rifles and put on our packs. After some time, we marched. After some time, we heard the shelling again. And we moved, A Company moved to the perimeter of Blerick. This side of Venlo. We were told it was the last pocket of resistance this side of the River Maas. So we dug a slit trench across from a blown up isolated house and the rest of the section on the other side, which were not quite so lucky because they were fired on with small arm fire. As it got dark, it was too cold to stay out in the open if there was a roof. So we moved into this partly burnt, partly blown up house with half the roof off for the night. And we done two on and four off in the Bren pits for the night. I was in a section now. Sem section. And Sem section was down to five men. So twos into five don't go. So Sergeant Rose said he will do a turn with me for 2 hours on, 4 hours off. When it came to his turn, our turn, he stayed in the house and I was out in the Bren pit all on my own. And his contribution was to come to the door every so often and shout if I was all right. So it was very, very airy out there on my own. With just the Bren gun, two hand grenades, and three magazines of ammunition, plus your 50 bandolier. When you're stood out on your own, you stay wide awake and alert all the time. The safety catch off the Bren gun. The firing pins on the hand grenades bent straight so they come out easy. Standing there, some shadows in front. So I shouted, "Halt!" So loud as I could, hoping that Sergeant Rose would hear me, but he didn't. "Friend," they said, "advance to be recognised. Give the password," which was always silly, the password. I think this time, if my memory is right, it may not be right, but the password was, "You say boots." And their answers was laces. And this was said by the officer. And it turned out that they were a mine clearing party that had been sent from another road to clear the road for the attack the next day. And they carried on clearing the bank right up past us that we had been walking on for a couple of days. The house was very isolated and the road behind us was being shelled. And the shelling fell in a pattern. So when we sent for the food, one man from East, three men, and they used to have to go back to the where the food was brought up and bring back three containers. Now this was all right going up to fetch it because you could tie on the shelling and run through it. But coming back, you were heavily more laden with these two big 3 foot canisters. And many a time the food was dropped when the shelling started and left out there to be shelled. And if it was important, like the tea and that, some would have to wait until the shelling stopped and dash and rescue the food. Now, these little things, when you're in the infantry section, sticks in your mind. It's not the bigger picture, it's just the infantry section. That is your comrades, a section. You do anything for the comrades in section. You didn't care what happened to anyone else, really, but the bigger picture. You were with your section, then your platoon, and then your company. You never knew, already ever knew, what the rest of the battalion was doing. And even down to platoon, you never knew what the other platoons were doing, actually. The next morning, we stayed another day, and we had to go up in the roof and keep watch, 1 hour each man. A really bitter cold up there. And Sergeant Rose had found some coke and coal in the outhouse. He lit a fire without trying not to make too much smoke. So half of us used to hang around the fire. And when the shelling started, we always used to dash for the small cellar for safety. Sergeant Rose got fed up with this. He told us either to stay around the effing fire or F off down the cellar in his Scottish language. And he bet us that the house would be it before the morning. And he was right, because the passage that was facing the enemy was it, and there was a big hole ripped in the wall, and the wind was bitter. It didn't help us to keep warm very much. And the attack went in the next day, went through us, all the paraphernalia of the attack, the tanks went down the road, the infantry, some riding, some walking. And then after a while, the inevitable Red Cross jeeps come dashing up the road with the white bandages with the red spots on. But it was nothing to do with us, really, so we had done our bit by doing the firm base for the attack to go through. After it quieted down, we fell in and marched back probably 3-5 kilometres to a place called Ruggle, where we were to spend quite a lot of time on and off in the winter campaign that was to come. We were stationed in a big barn, up in a big barn, and it must have been a drying barn or something, because there